Super Bowl Sunday has officially passed, and Tom Brady has cemented his status as the GOAT of the NFL, which you may be listening to the future GOAT of podcasts, and that's the Wrestling Guys podcast, and that starts right now. All right, coming to you from the Forgotten Borough, Staten Island, New York. This is the Wrestling Guys podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things in the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We're your host. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris Never Miss. I have no nickname this week. Couldn't think of one, but whatever. It's Chris Never Miss. Nonetheless, traditional virtual link because we're keeping it safe and we're keeping it nice. And how you doing? How'd you like that? How'd you like that Super Bowl game?
So I'm going to be honest, I didn't even turn it on. Me and my girlfriend Tara, we woke up that day and fell into a rabbit hole of watching reaction videos from Avengers Infinity War, like an Endgame of, you know, theater reactions. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and this was 11 o'clock, whatever. I was like, why don't we just put it on?
Right.
So we wound up watching both Infinity War and Endgame back to back, and then fell into another rabbit hole of videos on YouTube. And before I knew it, it was like 7 o'clock, and the game was, I think, going into halftime, and it was 21-6, I think, halftime.
Right.
And I was just like, well, it looks like Tampa's going to win this and run away with it. So I actually never turned the game on. We didn't have anywhere to go. You know, obviously COVID is, you know, prevents people from having large gatherings.
Not many people.
I mean, people are going to do what they want. And that's fine. But, you know, for us, we just decided not to go anywhere and we stayed in. And of course the snow didn't, not that it snowed bad, but it snowed. And we just wound up not turning it on. And then I think after a while, I was like, yeah, should we put on the game? It wasn't really even worth it at that point because Tampa was just running away with it.
That is sacrilege in America to not have put on the Super Bowl on Super Bowl Sunday. My God. But yeah, I mean, listen, Tom Brady wins. I mean, if he didn't think he was the GOAT already, he's definitely the GOAT now. For me, all intents and purposes, the conversation's over.
I did say Tampa would win. I did predict that.
You did. You did.
And yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue that Tom Brady is not the best quarterback of all time.
I mean, for me, it's Tom Brady and it's everybody else,
yeah.
You know, and that's not a knock on any other particular. I guess it's a knock, but, you know, I'm just tired of the GOAT conversation. I'm just tired of, you know, listen, you can do it in basketball and you can do it in baseball. But for me, there is no other QB that has the resume that he has. And I just honestly, it just cemented any other hater. There's no way you could deny his place in history right now. Anyway, that being said, talked enough about football hitting the gridiron. But speaking of iron, we're covering today the first ever Elimination Chamber match. We're going to be doing a nice watch along. We're starting the watch along series again. I had a lot of fun doing the Royal Rumble one. And since we're about, I mean, it's very, very soon after the Rumble. It's a week from Sunday as we record this podcast. We were going to say, like, hey, you know, how many can we watch? And given the time frame, we're like, hey, you know what? We'll do two minimum, at least. We'll cover the 2002 Elimination Chamber. And then as we were just about to record this, we decided we're also going to do the Extreme Elimination Chamber from December to December, often considered the worst WWE pay-per-view of all time and probably the worst Elimination Chamber of all time. So, you know, just like how we did on Royal Rumble. Little of the good, little of the bad, but we're covering nonetheless. Before we get into any of the history, the origin of anything, they just announced the participants for this year's Royal Rumble match. And I thought it was interesting what you had immediately texted me. So we saw...
Elimination Chamber match.
Right. What did I say?
Royal Rumble.
I did? Wow, man. I still got Royal Rumble on the brain. Look at that. So we have our six participants. It's going to be Drew McIntyre defending the WWE title against Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, Sheamus, AJ Styles, and The Miz. And that's just the first one. I'm sure there's going to be more than one. We don't know which one, if it's going to be a women's title match, a tag title match, or what have you, or a number one contender. But this is the first one, and the title's being defended. Were you surprised at this?
Not really surprised, but I think, you know, with Edge coming out and saying that he was close to making his decision until this match was made, I think the writing is kind of on the wall that, as at least my prediction now, is that Randy Orton will win the title in the chamber, and then we're going to have Edge versus Randy Orton at WrestleMania for the WWE title.
Wow, that's a sharp turn from what we were discussing last week. I mean, we were talking about Edge possibly, and for all intents and purposes, from what I'm reading, it's still Roman Edge locked in. But and now you're saying Randy winning the title and Edge saying he's going to not cash in, but use his title opportunity against Randy Orton at the chamber. Wow, that would make him, what, a 14-time champion, 15-time champion?
Yeah, it would.
Right? He's right up there with Cena and Flair at this point. Yeah. Really? I mean, that's interesting.
If you just go with story purposes, that's the story that makes the most sense. I did like what they did on SmackDown, though, with Edge coming out and Roman came out and was like, you know, acknowledge me. And then, you know, they had their stare down. And then Kevin Owens came and gave a stunner to Roman. So I guess they're going to continue the Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens feud. I would prefer Edge versus Roman Reigns because it's a match that has never happened. It's fresh. It's different. But considering how WWE, you know, their history and just how they play out their storylines, I just think it's going to be Edge and Randy at WrestleMania, and Randy's going to win the belt for a 15th time.
And if you're following from last year, so they faced each other at last year's Mania, then the greatest, you know, greatest wrestling match alive, whatever they call it, ever.
Right.
Now, before Edge had the triceps injury, there was talk of Orton beating McIntyre for the belt. So they had a long title feud with each other this past year. And then supposedly he was going to win the title, carry it into Mania for him and Edge to have a title feud. But then that seemed to be done, all intents and purposes, just for the fact that Drew won the title back and Edge beat Randy on Raw 2 weeks ago. And for me, I thought it was the nail in the coffin. Like, this is it. Now maybe Orton goes off with The Fiend and Edge, you know, goes off with, now we're assuming Roman. You know, to me, I don't know. I don't see Randy winning this belt. I you know, listen, logically, yes, Orton wins, Edge, you know, I keep saying cash in, but, you know, Edge says, you know, I want to face you. But Orton and The Fiend still have unfinished business, and I could very well see The Fiend being the reason why Orton loses this match.
Yeah, I hope they go that way. But I don't know, just my gut tells me that Orton will win.
I mean, to me now, and I know it was a little premature when we were talking last week, we were saying how there was no viable contender for McIntyre, and then Sheamus turned on McIntyre.
Yeah.
To me, I think they're building to Sheamus, McIntyre, and Mania. The two best friends, you know, and then Sheamus this past Monday when they announced the chamber, he said, well, Matt, you know, Drew promised me a one-on-one match and you put me in the chamber with him. And, you know, it just looks like they're building to that match at Mania. You know, friend versus friend, you know, it has a little story behind it. You know, they were teaming up and he just turned on him. And, you know, and again, we're fantasy booking here, but to me, it looks like it's going to be McIntyre, Sheamus at Mania. I think Orton and The Fiend are far from done, especially with Alexa Bliss constantly interfering in Orton's matches. She calls in the match against Edge the other week. And I just think The Fiend or Alexa will be the reason why he gets eliminated from the chamber.
I was just going to say, as long as we're fantasy booking, I think it might be a cool thing because Miz is part of the match, but we have to remember he's also the Money in the Bank briefcase carrier. So I would say a nice little swerve is to have him lose at some point, obviously, during the match, maybe be the first one eliminated. And if, you know, the match is going to go on for, what, 45 minutes, something like that. So Drew wins the match, and The Miz just comes right back out and cashes in and takes the title from him. And Drew can always just get it back before WrestleMania, so, you know, him and Sheamus could have that match. But I say that because I don't – part of me just doesn't see Drew McIntyre walking out with the belt.
I see that because very rarely do champions really defend the belt. I mean, they do, but, you know, I could also very well see The Miz cashing in after Drew wins, and Sheamus giving Miz a bro kick, allowing Drew to win because he wants to win the belt from Drew himself. Right. You know, I mean, listen, you know, we could be way off here. You know,
yeah, we could be.
AJ Styles could walk out of this with as the champion, you know, and or Jeff Hardy for all we fucking know. But yeah. You know, there are just a lot of factors. You know, the Sheamus factor with Drew and the Miz with Money in the Bank. And to be honest with you, I don't see a successful cash in for Miz at any point. I think it's going to be a losing situation because, you know, he's tied up with this thing with Bad Bunny. I won't be surprised if Bad Bunny causes him to lose the cash in at Money in the Bank. You know what I mean? At some point. You know, and he, dude, like him and Morrison are just, they're not jobbing out because I feel like jobbing out means like they're literally just, you know, they're putting on quality matches, but they're losing consistently, you know? And it seems like they're building up to this Bad Bunny, which I called, by the way, Damian Priest and Bad Bunny versus Miz and Morrison for Mania. And, you know, I don't see him having a successful Money in the Bank cash in. He has zero momentum. And then again, you've seen people with zero momentum cash that shit in and win the belt. So, you know, I don't know. You know, a lot of question marks, a lot of things left to be, you know, I guess left to be written in terms of this story. From my opinion, early prediction, I think Drew's going to make it out of this as the champion still. You're saying Randy Orton with the belt. So lock that in, guys. At Wrestling Guys PC, how do you feel? Do you think it's somebody different? That, you know, that's different. Quality guys. I'm surprised, though. Are you surprised that Kofi was not in this Elimination Chamber match, given his, you know, track record of just having really good chamber matches?
You know, honestly, I didn't even think of it. I'm not surprised because it seems like Kofi and Xavier are just, you know, they're going to be, obviously they've been a team for years now, but there's no plans to have them go on any type of singles run. And they're still feuding, apparently, with Retribution. Which I don't know when that's going to end.
You know what? I hate to say it, but when are we going to say that Retribution is pretty much dead in the water? You know, no momentum. They very little fanfare with the fans that are in there. You know, they tried something with Ali as a leader, which I actually personally loved, and I loved the backstory that Ali gave. But unfortunately, he gave the backstory on a podcast with Corey Graves, and they didn't even get any quality promo time to reveal it, and they're losing constantly.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate to say that because I do like Dijakovic a great deal. I like Mia Yim, even though we haven't really seen her lately. You know, and I just think it's a shame because, you know, like, you know, with your stables, you always want to see, like, who's going to break out from the pack. And Ali, man, is looking like he could be a quality heel with these guys, but they're just not giving him any type of steam to build up anything, you know?
Now, was I wrong, or did he get involved in the U.S. title picture on Raw?
You know, to be honest with you, I don't recall. I got about two-thirds of the way through Raw, and then my son started crying. So,
well, I know that Keith Lee and Riddle, they had a match, and Bobby Lashley came out and beat them both up.
Mm.
So I would imagine that puts Keith Lee in the picture for that. But I thought Ali got inserted in it somehow, too. I could be wrong.
I wouldn't mind the Fatal 4 with those guys.
No, I wouldn't mind it either at all. But I agree with you that Retribution is at this point, yeah, it's not looking like it's going to be around much longer. I'll just say that about it. Maybe it could have been something, but it just didn't turn out that way and hasn't yet. I don't see a long-term thing with this. I think that they need to just, you know, have Dijakovic be Dijakovic again and have Mia Yim be Mia Yim again. That's probably going to happen pretty soon.
They should have did that from the beginning, honestly, man.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see Retribution around much longer.
I don't either, and it's a shame, but it had some promise, but then, you know, you know what it is? They couldn't get over the hump of the fact that it's like, oh, these guys all have masks on, they look like idiots, and people just couldn't see past that fact. And, you know, if they gave Ali the opportunity to actually tell the story of why Retribution are all in mask. If you don't, guys, look, go back and listen to Corey Graves' podcast After the Bell with Ali. It happened maybe a few months ago, and he explains the reason, like the story behind why Retribution is in mask and why they're not named Dijakovic and they're named T-Bar and all this other BS. And it actually makes perfect sense. And in a storyline perspective, if you gave him some TV time to explain it, and not explain it like he needs to tell a long diatribe, but like really, really brief snapshots of each guy, it would have been great. And given the production values that WWE can put behind something, you really could have put some steam behind it, and you really could have made people, even if they didn't care about it, maybe understand it a little better and be like, okay, this is why, you know?
Yeah.
Because Ali used to cut these promos where he's like, my name is Mustafa Ali, and based on my name alone, you've already judged me. And I love those promos he used to cut by himself on his Twitter account.
Yeah.
And you know, I wish that they would have given him the time. You're giving him the opportunity as his leader, and you didn't give him any type of or any chance to build momentum with these guys. But anyway, I digress. I feel like we're going on a long tangent on Retribution.
Well, I want to bring up one quick point, if I can. Is it fair? I know that, you know, as we're watching it, obviously there are no fans. And we're just watching it, you know, from our homes on TV, and we're seeing that Retribution is something that's not going to stay around for a lot longer. Is it fair to judge it without a live audience there to gauge a live reaction to, you know, because we know that wrestling is very much based on how the audience reacts. And there's no crowd to boo them. There's no crowd to cheer them. There's no crowd to do anything. So is it fair to be like, you know, they're done because, they're not really seeing, you know, in real time how a crowd is reacting to them?
True, but I think if there was a crowd there, it'd probably be 10 times worse.
Yeah, you're right.
you know, just based on, and this is based off like the Twitter response, what I've seen online on like, you know, various different websites and outlets, and just people like, you know, critics or you know, the so-called wrestling journalists on how they talk about them alone. If there was a live crowd there as opposed to the Thunderdome, they'd probably be done a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. But I just feel like that would be, I think that'd be it, honestly. Yeah. You know, and I'm with you. And maybe there's some salvage. I mean, look, you saw Mercedes Martinez. She asked to be taken out of Retribution so she could focus on her singles career. And I think she kind of saw the writing on the wall herself. You know, and she's been in there 20 years. She doesn't know how much time she has, you know, left in her career. And she finally got to WWE. So she was like, you know, let me do something else. You know, I'm better suited for something else. And, you know, and there's no problem with saying that either. Anyway, how do you feel about that, guys? Retribution, dead in the water? Our Wrestling Guys PC. Let us know. How you doing? So let's get into this Elimination Chamber. So we're looking at the first ever for 2002. Where do you rank Elimination Chamber in terms of gimmick matches for you?
Right now, I'll just say without going through all of them, I'll just say it's my top five. I love the Elimination Chamber. I look forward to it every year. I like that it's a yearly thing. I love the concept of it because I like matches like this. I like matches that have multiple guys involved. I like the elimination style. The look of the chamber, the look has changed. You know, we know that it was originally just this big steel structure with steel grates and chain, and it's more plastic or plexiglass and platform now, which is meant to protect them, and rightfully so. But yeah, top five for me. I've always loved the chamber match.
I mean, it's up there for me. It is. I would say I would agree. It is top five for me. I mean, if you think about this, right? Before the Elimination Chamber, they only had steel cage matches in Hell in a Cell, right? Mm-hmm. I would dare say that at Elimination Chamber, I actually like better than Hell in a Cell at times. It does depend on the match, but like that Elimination Chamber is a yearly pay per view. But I don't like that Hell in a Cell is a yearly pay per view. That makes sense. Because I feel like Hell in a Cell could be like a huge blow off to like a really big feud, as opposed to, okay, here's a pay-per-view, we have to stick two guys in Hell in a Cell, or two ladies now. However,
I agree.
In the past few years, the Hell in a Cell matches have been really, really good. Like, I thought Sasha Banks and Bayley was really, really good this year. I thought Drew and Randy was good. And, you know, in years previous, you've had other ones that are really good. But I always feel personally that Hell in a Cell is better suited as a match where you need this final blow off for a match, and you're like, you know what, Hell in a Cell, and it could be inserted in any pay-per-view, not having to be a yearly pay-per-view. Where on the other hand, Elimination Chamber, I do like as a yearly pay-per-view. I don't know, maybe I'm weird about like that, but
well, because you can set it up differently. Like, Elimination Chamber is not meant to be a blow off to a rivalry or even even part of a rivalry. Like, you can stick six people and each one might have a problem with the other,
mm-hmm.
but it's not meant to be a blow off to it. It's used for, you know, title match, or it's used to determine a number one contender, which is why it's okay to have it as a yearly pay-per-view, as opposed to, like you said, with Hell in a Cell, where it's probably better suited for maybe a rivalry like Edge and Orton to, you know, have their blow off in Hell in a Cell.
Right. Yeah, it is. And that's where I'm at, because you could take six guys, like, for instance, like a few years ago with Kofi and Kofi Mania, and him and Daniel Bryan being the final two. And it's like, is he going to do it in the Hell in a Cell this time? Or I even remember a few years ago where Santino was in the last two with Daniel Bryan. He was defending the World Heavyweight Championship. You're like, oh, shit, can Santino pull this out?
He's always in those situations.
Right. Right. You know, but to me, it's like, okay, you could put these guys in there, viable contenders. Like, you know, it's funny because I remember me and you talking last week, like, well, who's a viable contender for Drew's title? And they gave us five guys. And I was like, you know what? These all make sense.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't, you know, maybe not in significant feuds or anything, but this makes sense to me because, you know, like Jeff Hardy's been in a feud with Elias, you know, and it's like, okay, no disrespect to Elias, but, you know, it's not an AJ Styles match that he had like this past Monday, which is pretty good. But, you know, you could stick those guys in, you're like, all right, any one of those guys could walk out with that belt. Even The Miz, even if he loses in the match, he can come back with that Money in the Bank. So it's cool. It makes sense. You know, and or you could take an up and coming guy. Like if they would have thrown Keith Lee in that match, I'd have been like, oh, damn, this is pretty cool. You know, and that's what I like about it too. Yeah, you got your six guys, you got your four pods, the two started off, what is it, 2 minute intervals?
Five minute
intervals.
Well, I think the first one is five and then it's two.
Two after end, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, right, when we first saw, because like I got to tell you now, the first Elimination Chamber, and I'm looking at a picture of it right now, is monstrous.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's humongous. It's huge. And then I'm looking at it, and the original structure was actually 16 feet high, 36 feet in diameter, 10 tons, 2 miles of chain. And it does. And like, if you look at it now, compare, and this is not wrestler friendly at all. There would be a ton of injuries in this match, injuries that would go from years later. But if you look at the Elimination Chamber now, the Elimination Chamber now is a lot smaller, but it's also conducive to a wrestling match. Like, for instance, the pods used to have chain link at the top. So if somebody tried to jump off the top, their foot might go through the chain link. And I know in previous years, like Big Show has pulled somebody through the chain link. Mm-hmm. Now there's actual platforms where the men, the ladies could stand on, they could do moves off of, push somebody off, do a move off of it. It makes more sense and it's more conducive, right? You know, and I think in this match in particular, Rob Van Dam tries to do a five-star frog splash. He can't even jump that high because he's too high to the ceiling. And I think he hits Triple H's trachea, causes an injury. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and now in this year, like, you know, the ceiling of the Elimination Chamber now is more elevated. The platforms are better. The platforms on the side actually have padding on them. They're not like a steel grate that's kicking your ass. But at the time when we saw this and remember this, this was Survivor Series 2002, Madison Square Garden. And I remember actually watching it at your house.
Yep. I remember we watched it. Yeah.
And we were like, this thing is humongous.
Yeah. And it's huge. You can tell that it's unforgiving for those that are, you know, have to participate in this, but it's also just so cool looking. And what one thing that I liked about it too is this was at the time the closest we got to War Games, because when Eric Bischoff announced it, he said that it was a mix of a lot of different matches, but mainly War Games. But apparently this was Triple H's creation.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy how Triple H thinks of this match, and then he brings back War Games years later in NXT. War Games was always the one match I wanted. When we've talked about this before, when we watched our War Games circle, that I always wanted when they bought WCW. Mm-hmm. And when they said it's War Games esque, I was like, oh, dude, they're going to have two rings with like a giant Hell in a Cell, let's say. I don't know. I just made it up or something. And when they talked about the Elimination Chamber, I'm like, what the hell is this? Right, but it worked, and it ended up being their own thing. You know, they didn't want to bring at the time. They don't want to bring another WCW element over because they already brought those rosters over in 2001.
Yeah,
you know, so now it's like, okay, well, we want to put our own thing on it. Let's put our own spin. So, yeah, exactly. You know, you know, you're having a cage that's actually level with the ring apron, so guys could actually walk around it. You know what I mean? You still have your countdown intervals. There's no teams. It's all, you know, individual, and you're putting a title on it. On top of that, right? I mean, so if I'm looking at this now from a WWE magazine article back in, I think 2009, they actually interviewed one of the production designers who co-designed the structure. And so they made it in Colorado Springs. It took 6 to 8 weeks to design. It cost $250,000 to construct.
Wow.
So they what was it, they actually it's steel, but they painted it black. So you have three large steel frames with sheets of plexiglass. Each plexiglass costs $225 per sheet. And talking about, again, 2 miles of chain. They needed a 50-foot flatbed truck to actually transport the chain with two Madison Square Garden. Assembly in the arena took 8 hours to complete. Eight motors were used to suspend the structure itself over the ring apron, over the ring before the event. Each event, because think about this, they used this multiple times, right? Yep. So 8 hours, 50-foot flatbed, eight motors, right? And when it wasn't in use, they actually had a warehouse at a dock in Newark, New Jersey. So it's also an arena thing, because if you look at it, Elimination Chamber can't be held at a bunch of arenas because of its size and weight. So it's similar to how War Games could only be held in certain arenas because of the cage and stuff like that. So there were only certain places where they could do it. All right. So this is a massive undertaking. This is a massive idea. And you're like, okay, well, can MSG actually hold this damn structure?
Well, it did. It definitely did. And I think, too, one of the reasons why War Games took so long to become a part of WWE is because Vince McMahon apparently didn't like the idea of having to remove rows of seats in order to fit it in.
Right.
You gotta wonder, though, if they had to do that for this. Because we've been to MSG a bunch of times. MSG is big. It's not huge.
It's not.
But I wonder if they had to remove a bunch of rows of seats to be able to fit this.
I'm sure they did. But, I mean, even if you look at the pod now, so, like, I have the thumbnail up, and you can see that the chamber's almost very, very close to the ring barricade. So it does take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, the way they designed it, you know, you figure at this point in 2002, they're still selling out. So, but also it being in Madison Square Garden for the first time, they always say that even though they run the garden, they don't make a profit anyway. So, you know, I don't think they cared. Maybe in this case, if they took it out, they're trying something new, you know, whereas they will retire it for a few years because of its massive size and not being able to run in certain arenas. And then I remember when the network first launched, they launched it as a network-only exclusive pay-per-view for 1 year, and then they decided to bring it back full-time. Mm-hmm. And that was because, you know, it just wasn't conducive to, you know, not every arena could hold it, so when can you actually have it? But it actually got the official redesign back in 2017. So instead of the round circular pods, it became square. The actual chamber itself was square instead of circular. It had sliding doors that the referees could actually open from the outside, as opposed to, I think, the wrestlers would, or they would kind of just put them out. And mm-hmm. then the top of the center was actually raised to 26 feet. So, and then, you know, they put LED lights and they put padding on it for once. And the reason for the redesign, aside from it being, you know, better, like we said, better for the wrestlers to perform moves off of and stuff like that, was actually more practical because certain venues can't hold that giant circular elimination chamber. So now this one's a little bit more, you know, design friendly for other venues in this case. And you see it now. It actually it looks smaller, but it still looks menacing. And yeah. I actually like the redesigned chamber a lot better than the original.
Yeah, I don't mind it. Yeah, I'm just glad that it's something that, you know, that they're still able to do. Because, like I said, I look forward to this event every year. There have been 26 Elimination Chambers matches since the first one here in 2002. So that's kind of a lot.
That is a lot. I mean, and you think about it, right? What was it? The first four were strictly Raw matches before they started. I think the fifth is actually the December to Dismember match. So,
yeah.
And then they started doing it as, what was it, a co-branded pay-per-view. I think it would be like one Raw and one SmackDown chamber, if correct me if I'm wrong here.
Right. And then we finally got a women's one, and they even started doing tag team matches in it.
Yeah, I always enjoyed the tag team matches. Actually, you know, me and my son, my son, who's 4 years old, going on 17, I don't know, sometimes he talks, but he likes to, when there's another pay-per-view coming up, he always likes to watch, like, the old events before the current pay-per-view. So since we're, like, a week out from Elimination Chamber, he always likes to watch the old chamber matches, and we were actually just watching the first women's tag team title match at the chamber. And he loves that one. He loves women's wrestling. And we were just watching it, and I was just like, wow, man, we've come a long way from 2002, because I knew we were doing the show. And I was like, the way it looks, the design, the wrestlers that are in it, we actually have quality women's wrestlers to have a whole Elimination Chamber and tag team women at that. You know what I mean? It's pretty significant. And this match now, and like how you said, what is it, like 26 matches total. It is significant. The amount of Hall of Famers that have done it, gone in the chamber, and the amount of Hall of Famers that are in this match. You're talking Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, Kane, Chris Jericho, all current Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. Incredible. You know, and you've had some duds along the way. Again, ECW, we're looking at you. But listen, I mean, it's part of WWE's history. It's one of their originals, right? I mean, you know, they came up with it, and now it's a staple. And I enjoy it personally. I'm ready to watch this thing. What about you?
Let's do it. Let's get this show on the road.
So if you're on WWE Network, soon to be on Peacock, Survivor Series 2002 in your pay-per-view list. You're going to go all the way. So here's the thing. In the very beginning, there's a promo, a bunch of promos for the chamber. You have one with Shawn Michaels, one with Triple H. And then you have Bischoff, who comes out to show off the Elimination Chamber. He talks for a few minutes. And then you have Saliva performs the song King of My World as Chris Jericho is entering the chamber. Right? And he's the first person in. However, it sucks. So it's like him cutting back and forth while he's walking out to Saliva. I think they're performing at WWE New York at the time, the restaurant.
Yeah. At the time, I think, though, it was called The World, right?
Yeah, The World. Yeah. So at this point, we're going to go to the very last thumbnail, which is when the match is actually going to start with the other entrances. So we're at one hour, 55 minutes, 21 seconds. It's the last one where it says first ever WWE Elimination Chamber match. I'm going to make mine full screen here because there is no HD and we have this nice little square black box around the actual screen itself. We're gonna start right now in 3, 2, 1, and the first chamber match is, so Chris Jericho's currently in the pod. He's actually one half of the Raw tag team champions at this point. Yep. Booker T, the second entrant in the chamber, and I think in this particular one, the way they enter in this match is the way they will enter in the match, right? Mm-hmm. So it's Jericho, and then it'll be Booker T, and then whoever is next. I forget who is actually.
I think Kane might be next.
Really?
Yeah.
So I mean,
Kane is next out, yeah.
This structure is massive, man.
So I think Rob Van Dam and Triple H start the match.
And like we said, a number, Triple H, I think, will get the worst in this match.
Yeah, and I think it happens early on too, and we'll see it. But RVD crushed his
trachea. Actually, if I'm reading correctly, there was actually swelling on the side of his throat, which actually put pressure on his esophagus and trachea.
Yeah, and caused him to, I think, pass out a few times during the match. And it's a brutal injury.
Yeah, nothing like not being able to breathe. I mean, seriously, I think he also says that he broke his wrist in this.
So just all around a bad night, because I guess for those who haven't seen the match, I don't know if we should give a spoiler, but he also loses. So
yeah, gets his ass beat,
loses the belt. He is the world champion. I miss that big gold belt. I really do.
It's actually one of my favorite. I actually have a replica currently in my basement, but I got it like secondhand off of eBay. It's kind of falling apart. I almost want to buy a new one off WWEshop.com because I do love that belt.
Look at Kane, nice and lean and muscular there.
He's huge at this point, man. He has that new mask where you can actually see the bottom of his face. This is where I think he was talking a lot more, cutting promos on his own. But, dude, was he a massive dude. Look, easy. He is ripped here, as opposed to when we've seen him at this year's Royal Rumble. See, the chain link I hate at the top of the pod, he just grabbed onto it. But it's like, how are you going to do any type of move off of that thing without breaking through it? I do think at some point somebody actually steps on it and it breaks.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So here's Shawn Michaels would have made his reemergence at that previous SummerSlam, and that great no sanction match against Triple H, really really awesome match. But here, short hair, brown tights, don't like it, sucks.
Yeah, and if you listen to anyone as far as the wrestlers talk about this match, Jericho, Triple H, they all made fun of Shawn Michaels' look here, like with the poop brown pants and this Dutch boy style haircut. Not the HBK that we're used to, but it was great to have him back.
I mean, this is the first time he actually was wearing his tights in a significant match.
Right.
Because in the unsanctioned match, he actually wore jeans and a wife beater.
Tank top, yeah.
Right? So. I mean, New York guys would call them wife beaters, sorry. but yeah, and then he comes back out with the pants, and he's wearing the doo-doo brown HBK pants. And then he actually, he cut it really short. And he was wearing cowboy boots on top of that. I mean, what the hell is going on here?
It's a weird look for sure, yeah. Definitely a weird look.
Yeah, but you know what? Who advised him? Like, you know what? This is a good idea. Wear the cowboy boots because you're from Texas and these shit brown HBK tights and cut your hair really short so you look like Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Like, come on, dude. You know, I mean, listen, I love him. One of the greatest of all time. But here's one of the greatest high flies of all time, Rob Van Dam.
And RVD's still going if you watch Impact, which I do not because it's kind of tough to watch.
It's painful, and I think he actually finished up with them. He's he's done. He has moved on. Him and his, I believe, wife, Katie Forbes?
Girlfriend, wife, yeah, whatever she is to him. But,
yeah. So, yeah. Look at that, Rob Van Dam. Another one looking real sprightly.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, obviously.
This is 2002, man. 2002, you're talking.
Was it 20 years ago?
It's longer than 20 that. Years ago, my God. This is unbelievable. That. I mean, this is amazing how we're talking about it now. And I think we were still in high school when this happened.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And here comes the world heavyweight champion for this match.
That big gold belt really is a beauty, though.
Yeah, it's awesome. I remember when they brought it back here, too, and they did the brand split for the first time ever, and Brock went to SmackDown with the WWE title, and Eric Bischoff brought back the world, the big gold belt, and said, here you go, Triple H, you're the champ.
Yeah, and he had it for a significant amount of time.
Yeah, so, I mean, he would lose it here and then would win it back the next month and then had it for a long time. Close to a year, I think, after that.
And that was the, which I think, you know, that'd be a good time to cover, the three stages of hell match, which no one does anymore.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. I wonder why. I always thought that was a fun match, a cool concept.
I mean, the only ones I remember, and I'm sure maybe there was more, but it was Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and that'd be the rematch for the World Heavyweight title, and Triple H against Austin.
No Way Out in 2001.
And I don't remember there being another one since.
There was one, I think, was it Triple H and Randy Orton that had one in like 2009, I want to say?
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong, but I think they did.
Because I enjoyed that match for sure. And it was cool, you know, it could be a regular match, a street fight, you know, but now they just call it, because I know in NXT, they did a 2 out of 3 falls match where Adam Cole picked one, Johnny Gargano picked a match, and the last match was like a cage or something like that. So, you know, kind of your three stages of hell.
Yeah.
Without saying it's three stages of hell. You know what I mean?
Something they should bring back in the next video game.
That would be cool. You know what I actually want them to bring back is the casket match. I do miss that. Even though it was kind of weird, the concept, it was fun. So you have a world title for grabs, the famous Earl Hebner, who's also no longer with the company. Triple H and RVD starting it off. Triple H, too, he's in this evolution phase. He has no facial hair. He's going for the, you know, the kind of almost like the nostalgia Ric Flair look, right? Wearing the suits, no facial hair, real clean shaven, like you said. And here we go. RVD, you want to talk about a guy who kind of, they gave him the world and he kind of just blew it. I mean, oof.
Yeah, you know, getting pulled over and, you know, got caught with weed on him. And, you know, too bad it wasn't like it is now where, you know, weed looks like it's going to be legalized everywhere.
Right. No, at the time it's, he's busted.
Yep. But RVD was always fun to watch. And we always waited for him to get that shine. And then when he finally won Money in the Bank and then beat John Cena for the title, the WWE title, it was like, yeah, finally. But, you know, that incident, they took it off him very quickly after that.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Here's the first bump on the cage.
Oof. You know that hurts. Yeah. He took a lot on the hip. And I know he's selling it like a madman, but you know that hurts like hell.
Yeah, I'm sure that's real right there. That reaction is real.
Because, you know, if you hear the sound, and I'm just going to unmute it real quick. You could hear it as they're walking on it, right? Yeah. You could tell it's like it's a metal grate. Even the chain link itself.
Yeah, you can. That's got to just. It definitely hurts. It can't not hurt. And Triple H is going, they broke it.
Already. And they broke the door open. He went into that cage about three times and broke the door open on the third one.
Didn't take long for them to break the structure. We talked about how long it took them to put that together, and they immediately broke it. Triple H busted open already.
Wow. Triple H, no one could, him and Shawn Michaels could get busted up with the best of them, let me tell you. Oh, and there he goes. Oh, monkey flip right on the steel grate.
Yeah, that hurts.
I mean, you talk about these wrestlers, and I think Jericho has said on his podcast before, too. It's like, you're feeling this for a few days after, maybe a week, probably more, and wow.
Rolling thunder, yeah.
From the ring to the outside, while Triple H is on the grate, he's really taking a lot of punishment in these first few minutes, and he would go on to go all the way to the end here, too. So it's like, wow. Yeah,
and you can see the marks on his back there from the grating.
That is incredible.
That was a cool move, though.
But yes.
Gotta hand it to him.
RVD was always a good innovator, though.
Absolutely.
I think Triple H, after taking all those bumps outside on the chamber, is very happy to take this body slam inside the ring. Also, here it is right now.
Yeah,
you have RVD climbing up the chain link. Let's get some sound for this. He's on the top of the pod. He clearly can't jump. Jericho's trying to grab him and pulls his leg through the chain link. So this is not the scenario, I don't think.
It might be coming up, though. You see Triple H trying to get up there, but RVD not.
He just.
Oh, no, maybe not, because he fell to the outside.
Yeah, he just fell on the post. Okay, so this wasn't the actual spot. But look, so we're talking about how the chain link played a role. This was actually pretty cool that Jericho actually jumped up, pulled his leg through the chain link. That actually helped out, and you know, and causing Triple H to do something. But then, of course, Triple H and RVD totally missed Triple H on that. Almost, you know, rolling senton and landed on his ass. He's actually holding the back of his leg. Shawn Michaels is like, he's calling the ref saying he hurt his leg. And he's shaking it out, seems like, with his leg. Oh. Yeah, he landed right on
it. Yeah.
Even Shawn Michaels is like, oh, damn. I came back for this shit. Look at the marks on Triple H's back. You are right. My God. So the chain link is cool in terms of that, being able to, you know, grab him from the ropes. I think somebody, maybe it's actually the December to Dismember where they break out of the top of the cage and have to climb out, if I'm wrong, you know, but I know what is one match, but the platforms to me is actually a lot better.
Well, in December to Dismember, they had weapons hanging all over the chamber.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Countdown to the next entrant here.
Yeah, and we're at 5, 4, 3, 2, and I love the music when the next person's coming in. I'm gonna mute after this. That was great.
And it is Jericho.
Just full of suspense. Jericho, the first person out, and the first person out in the chamber. At the time with his little red tips on his hair. But just to show you the longevity of Jericho's career, still doing it good now. Than he did back then, man. I mean, he's doing great things in AEW right now. He's probably my favorite guy in AEW besides Moxley and Omega.
And I got to interview him and John Moxley at an AEW press conference. Nice guy.
Both really?
Yeah, yeah. You know, they were I mean, maybe it's because it was the press room, but they were, you know, very happy to answer questions and just very pleasant to talk to. It was really cool to be, you know, right across from him and directly talking to him.
That's awesome, because you know what they say, don't meet your heroes. Always end up in disappointment. Yeah. That's good, man. It's good to hear when you hear some of these guys are really cool. RVD jumping from the top rope onto the chain link, catches himself, and then reverse flying body press on Jericho onto the grate. He is just showing off in this match right now.
This is definitely a match tailored for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then coming from the ECW world, he can incorporate some of that element. His high flying skills and everything, his innovative moves. So it's definitely helping him out. Triple H is just in bad shape already.
Triple H struggling to get to his feet. He took pretty much 5 minutes of RVD just beating his ass.
Yeah.
And now they're double teaming Van Dam here. Oh, classic Jericho pin. Never works, though.
Yeah, man, dude. RVD in these first few minutes of the match is really becoming the MVP.
Harley Race knee.
And a nice senton. Jericho just smiling like, yeah, whatever.
And eliminations can occur at any time, so it's not like they have to have all six people in before they can start eliminating.
Right, so you can get pinned. I think we will see this. A few wrestlers actually do get pinned before the final.
Everybody's in, yeah.
Yeah, it comes out.
So I think it's the first was five and now it's two.
I believe so. I should have timed it. Since we're all about the timing here. But I do think it's similar to the war games, right? The initial two guys are 5 minutes and it's 2 minutes every entrant after. It's weird seeing Triple H with hair here. I mean, I know he had it for a long time, but every time we see him now, he's bald.
Yeah, and you know, his bald look, it's not a look that I was like, oh, this is going to take getting used to. I thought it suited him.
Yeah, he pulls it off really nicely. Whereas Shawn Michaels with bald, with a bald head did not
look good.
Yeah, and whereas Triple H, I'm like, oh, wow, it looks good. For Shawn Michaels, I'm still getting used to it.
So we mentioned this taking place in Madison Square Garden, November 17th, 2002. 17,930 people in attendance.
Wow.
So that's a lot of people.
I believe we were in our senior year of high school at this point, just showing our age here.
Yeah.
That is pretty crazy.
And this was, overall, this pay-per-view I thought was fun, but there was no traditional Survivor Series matches at this pay-per-view.
This would follow a trend every so often where they decided against it. Right. I mean, there was a tag team match. There was an elimination tables match. That was Dudley Boyz and Jeff Hardy against 3 Minute Warning and Rico Constantino.
Yep.
You had Billy Kidman defeating Jamie Noble for the Cruiserweight title. Victoria defeating Trish Stratus. It was a hardcore match for the Women's Championship. Big Show actually defeated Brock Lesnar because Paul Heyman turned on him for the WWE Championship. And he would only hold that belt for a month before losing it to Kurt Angle. And then him and Kurt Angle will go on to headline WrestleMania 19. And then in the finals, for the WWE Tag Team Championship, it was Los Guerreros defeating Edge and Rey Mysterio. Actually, it wasn't the finals. Edge and Rey Mysterio were the champions.
And here comes Chris Booker T.
Yeah, and Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle, and Los Guerreros would actually win the belt here, and then you would have the Elimination Chamber match.
So all, well, not all, but most Elimination style matches, just not Survivor Series style matches.
Right, you had Elimination Table match, a Triple Threat Elimination match, and the Elimination Chamber itself. So you had three variants.
Spinneroonie coming up.
Still do it like the best of them. How you doing? What a guy.
So apparently Booker T recently said that he would come back for a match if it took place in Saudi Arabia because of the paycheck and if it was against Triple H. So I wonder if that's something that'll happen.
Oh, is that a rematch from 19 that he's always wanted?
Yeah, a match that apparently he was supposed to win, and Triple H was like, nah, that's not going to happen.
Kind of campaigned but against it, right?
That's the rumor, at least.
But yeah, the prevailing rumor is that he was supposed to win, and Triple H politicked his way into not dropping the title to Booker T.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you know, we don't work for them. We don't book it. I've never heard Booker T come out and say he was supposed to win it. But who the hell are we?
Exactly. RVD just trying to get a...
I'll tell you this, though. It's still real to me, damn it. Okay. And so now you got four in the ring. You got Booker T, RVD, Jericho, and Triple H. Triple H just laying out on the outside. So is Jericho at this point, even though he just came in not too long ago. Booker T and the MVP of this match so far, RVD, really going at it right now. The near fall there, which is very rare to see a near fall, right? You know, very few near falls you see in Elimination Chambers nowadays.
Booker T and Rob Van Dam, I think they would go on to be tag team champions in like WrestleMania. I think that's, or was that the year prior?
Might have been the year prior, because
WrestleMania 20 is when they defended the belts, I think.
Oh, so there you go. That'd be the year after then. Yeah. So because I know 19 was Triple H.
Booker. All right. So it was still a couple of years. Yeah.
And it would be Angle and Lesnar.
Right. Here it comes now.
So this is it. Right?
This is it, yeah. RVD's going to the top of the pod again.
Yeah, so he went to the top rope. The crowd's cheering. He went to the top of the pod. Again, there's no room from the ceiling of the chamber to the pod. So he actually has to hold onto the chain link because he can't actually stand up all the way. So he's not going to get full extension. He's not going to get full air on the other thing. He could barely stand up to the RVD thing.
Ugh.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You right see across it. His throat.
You see
knee.
It.
And he even hurt his knee on that.
Yeah. So... RVD, RVD at that point couldn't even do the thumbs to say RVD without having to hold himself on the chain link because he can't stand firm on the chain link, right? He's actually balancing himself on the edge of the pod. He can't get any air. He can't do a full jump. And as he lands, the knee goes right into the throat of Triple H. I'm surprised Triple H didn't pull out of this match early. I mean, this just shows you the toughness of Triple H at this point.
Yeah, and Booker you can T, tell he's clearly injured.
He's in pain. Yeah, he's still holding the throat. He's holding the side of his neck at this point, and they're not even touching him. And missile drop kick off the top, and RVD is eliminated.
Classic WCW Booker T finisher right there, the missile drop kick.
Yeah, but surprised, because I remember us watching this originally and saying, and look at this, Booker T climbs over to Triple H. I think Triple H is saying to him, like, get the hell off me, dude. Like, and he puts his foot on the rope, but it's Elimination Chamber. And the foot on the rope shouldn't count because there is no DQ or anything in this match. I'm thinking that he put his foot on the rope. He can't kick out. Exactly. Yeah. And here he is rolling to the outside. He is in pain at this point. I mean, the fact that Earl Hebner, we talked about this with Reigns and KO being able to call audibles, the same thing with the ref. I think the Hebner saw what was up. And with the foot on the rope, he had to be like, okay, Triple H wouldn't do that unless he, you know, unless Hebner was like, you know, he was confused. But, I, you know, Hebner's a pro. RVD was shining in this match in the first four entrants. And surprised that they didn't wait for all six guys to get in the ring before they eliminated somebody first. I remember watching this at your house and saying the same exact thing.
Yeah, I wonder if it had something to do with just the amount of people in the ring at the same time. But we've seen 40 guys in the ring at once, so I don't know how much if that's really true.
I think it was the fact that it's the first time they're ever doing this match, coordinating spots with six people in this cage. I guess you don't want anybody to get severely hurt, so it was like, okay, we'll bring four guys in, we'll take one out. I think there was always just meant to be four, because I think Kane will come in at this point and eliminate either Jericho
right now. Yeah, so Kane's gonna come in now.
And I think Booker T would be the next eliminated. I don't know if it's by Jericho or Kane, if I remember correctly.
Now, I've never, you've been to more shows than I have. I've never been to a pay-per-view that had a gimmick match. So I've never seen like a steel cage. I've never seen a Hell in a Cell. Never seen Elimination Chamber. I don't know if you have. but I wonder how much it obstructs the view of the audience.
It does. So I've seen several cage matches in person. I've never seen a Hell in a Cell, so I couldn't tell you about that. I've never seen an Elimination Chamber. I have seen, you know, like ladder matches. I've seen, actually been to the TLC pay-per-view, the first TLC pay-per-view at Barclays Center when the Shield debuted against Ryback, Daniel Bryan, and Kane.
That was a good match, too.
Yeah, so, you know, I saw the ladder match with Dolph Ziggler and Cena, and I saw that match in particular as well. Those obviously doesn't obstruct anything, right? It's just the ring with those things. And, oh, and Jericho going through the plexiglass door, Kane. You had to do that in this match, right? Somebody had to go through that door at that point, you know?
You definitely had to, but the thing with plexiglass is it is mega sharp when it's broken. So.
Right. Got to be careful. You're not cutting anybody out. And Triple H is just standing there, and he's still in this, man. Good for him. Getting back to what you were saying. So, yeah, I saw – it's funny. I saw big – we went to a No Way Out at the former Izod Center that's no longer in operation. It was a No Way Out pay-per-view with Big Show against John Cena in a cage match. With John Laurinaitis, he was GM at the time.
2012.
And if he lost, John Laurinaitis would get fired. It doesn't interfere so much, depending on, you know, obviously the placement of the wrestlers, and honestly depends on where you sit. Because a few years later, I would go to Newark and watch the Asylum match between Dean Ambrose and Jericho, which was in a cage, and. You know, I sat a little bit closer so you could actually see better through the cage as opposed to where I sat a little bit higher and that you could actually see down into the cage. You know, it wasn't really a big obstruction. I feel like if you were to sit mid-level in some of these arenas, maybe the top of the cage would probably obstruct your view. But in both instances, I was a little bit higher. And there's Booker T eliminated with the Lion Salt.
Yeah, so you're right. So once the next guy's about to come in, which the last is Shawn Michaels, somebody gets eliminated. So four in at a time.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to keep it four, probably be a little safer, because you know what it is, you could have these guys on opposite sides of the chamber going at each other, where it's like, you know, what are you going to do with the six? I think it was just to play it safe.
Yeah, because that would change if you watch, you know, future Elimination Chamber matches, there would be more guys in at once.
Right, and then like when you have all six in, you know, who's laying on the floor outside, so you can't do a move out there, and who's doing a spot on the other side, you know. I mean, I think they handle it real well. Don't get me wrong. These guys are professionals. I'm just saying at the time, this is the first time you've ever done this match before. You know, you want to make sure it goes off without any type of issues.
Jericho busted open too, something we don't see a lot of anymore.
Yeah, and Jericho literally just pulled Kane closer to whisper in his ear. And he does a gorilla press from the cage outside into the ring. Oof, Jericho, man. And Triple H just goes to do something, grabs him by the back, gets a hit, and he back on the floor he goes. I mean, dude, he's really toughing it out here, because I think he would say it was hard to breathe several times in this match because of the swelling that was going on in his throat at the time. And to think that he goes through a whole series of spots with Shawn Michaels at the end.
Yeah, and it's funny the things you remember, because he actually would not be on Raw the next night. He would come back the following week.
Right.
You know, he spent the night in the hospital.
And it's funny because every time he's in MSG, so he would have that big New York street fight with Mick Foley, and he would get all types of screwed up in that match as well. He would get pierced by a pallet in his leg, he would get stabbed, he'd be busted open in that too. So MSG, not kind to Triple H.
Except for his return in 2002.
That was
his big return, the huge pop he got. Now he's going to take a huge press slam.
He held on. I don't know if you noticed that. He held on to the top rope. Maybe to lessen the fall, you know, the impact of the fall. He's still holding on to his throat.
Kane definitely protected him as much as he could there.
Yeah, he grabbed him and he slowly threw him over, and Triple H held on to the ropes. And you could see actually Triple H saying something to Kane at that point when he's on the floor. So Jericho and Kane kind of doing their own thing. And Triple H every so often gets up to do some type of spot that'll knock him out even further. And here's the final 10. For Shawn Michaels, he's the last guy. He's just warming up in there, doing little jumping jacks with his fucking doo-doo brown pants. I can't get over that. With the cowboy boots, man, what a bad look. Could this be, you know what? This might go into the Bad Look Hall of Fame. I think this might be one of the worst looks in terms of ring attire in history. Can you think of anything worse?
Maybe I can in a minute, but it's definitely up there. I mean, it's not a good, especially for Shawn Michaels. It's just, And you can see, too, it's got like a kind of a religious theme going on there, because this is when...
Yeah, he's getting his born-again Christian. He just became one on his way back, right? At Wrestling Guys PC, has there been worse ring attire than the Doodoo Brown Elimination Chamber Shawn Michaels pants? With the Cowboys. I think it's garbage.
It's definitely not good. I hated Shinsuke Nakamura's shirt that they had him wear, which I'm glad they took it off of him.
Oh, the Power Ranger costume?
Yeah, oh God, it's awful.
It didn't bother me too much. I mean, maybe because it was like, you know, the heel turn, so change the ring attire, change everything, change the music, you know? I don't know how he just didn't die of heat exhaustion from wearing that thing. But, you know, it's the same thing with MVP wearing that whole bodysuit. I don't get it. Yep. And a long match, too. At least he took the sleeves off at the end. Here's Triple H up again with a choke slam. And look at Kane. Wow, Kane. You want to talk about taking care of somebody right there? Kane takes him up for the choke slam and almost like places him back down on his back. But yet he slams the shit out of Jericho just now.
Here's a fun fact. So we all know that Shawn Michaels has that lazy eye. He actually got that in a match against Kane. Kane broke Shawn Michaels or his eye socket, and it caused his eye to...
Wait a minute. When did Shawn Michaels get a lazy eye? Oh, sweet chin music to Kane. Shawn Michaels, who just came in the ring, is somehow passed out.
Don't tell me you've never noticed Shawn Michaels' lazy eye.
I've never noticed the lazy eye of Shawn Michaels. Now you're going to make me... I now have to search for it.
Really? Just look up a picture of him now. You see his eye. And a pedigree to Kane.
And then I'm guessing a lion saw coming at him right now. So Kane had his little moment to shine. And this is where Kane goes. All three. Sweet chin, pedigree... Lion Salt, Kane saying something like, thanks, guys, got to go.
So two eliminations for Jericho.
So it went from RVD to Jericho, maybe the MVP with his two eliminations.
Now Shawn Michaels and Jericho are going to go at it. And they would have, of course, a great rivalry in the years to come.
Oh, my God. Yes, I see it now.
I'm surprised you've never noticed it.
I've never noticed it, man. Maybe because I'm too busy looking at the action in the ring, okay? Is it his left eye? The one that's kind of like low, like it looks like it's kind of like lower. His eyelids a little bit droopier. Yep. So he got that in a match with Kane, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's some good trivia right there.
Shawn Michaels takes his, I think it's the first bump he took on that grading there, getting clothesline.
You know, at this point, I don't think Shawn Michaels is really fearful of re-injuring the back. I mean, he wanted to go with Triple H in that street fight. They really went all out in that match.
That was a great match.
That's such a good match. What a good in terms of SummerSlam matches, one of the all-time best.
One of the all-time best SummerSlam pay-per-views, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he had a lot of good matches on that one. You know, he took some hard bumps in that match too. You know, and I think that kind of proved to him, like, yeah, you know, I think I could do this full time again. Oh, is Shawn Michaels getting busted open hard way here?
Jericho's definitely punching him in the forehead.
And it's starting to come out slowly. Look, Jericho's actually squeezing his forehead to get the blood out. And now Triple H is getting on him, too. Almost felt like hard way. Or almost like he cut himself and Jericho was just trying to help him get it out. Jericho doing a little Muhammad Ali shuffle there. Wow, two Hall of Famers, one future Hall of Famer. Is Jericho in the GOAT conversation, given the longevity of his career and how he's able to just stay creative after all these years?
I mean, yes. The answer is yes. But I think... it becomes a more difficult conversation when you try to figure out where he's actually placed among the greats. Like, is he the number one greatest of all time? I mean, in my book, I don't think I would put him number one, but I think it's hard to say that he's not considered because of his longevity. you know, he's still having good matches. He's still very relevant to the wrestling business. You know, he's able to constantly reinvent himself and come up with new things and change. And, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due. He's certainly one of the greatest of all time.
I just love that his character is constantly evolving. You know, even in the last few years, the Alpha Club in New Japan, then he's the Painmaker against Okada. Now he's Le Champion. I love that stuff. You know, like he's just able to constantly reinvent himself.
And it's something that when I interviewed him, I asked him about, and, you know, how he's able to constantly reinvent himself. And he credits it to David Bowie, who, you know, I assume he admired, and how David Bowie was always changing his look. And he's definitely one of the greats ever.
I mean, that's cool, incorporating the music. You know, he's a musician in his own right. Big fan of the Judas song, by the way.
It is a cool song.
You know, he's using that rock star stuff, you know, like the lifestyle, the looks. I agree totally. That's great. And Triple H is really, ever since that blow with the 5-star, really slowed down in this match significantly. You know, he had a little spot with the Pedigree, but other than that, nothing really to show for until him and Shawn Michaels are just a one-on-one at this point. How is Shawn Michaels wrestling in these cowboy boots? I don't know. They must be uncomfortable as hell.
Yeah, well, you know what? Some of these guys, the things that they wear, I don't understand how they do it. Like, how do they wrestle in those tight-ass jeans? Like, how does Elias wrestle in those jeans?
How did, you know, Dean Ambrose wear a tank top and jeans for the longest? I mean, at least now he has some proper tights and some ring attire, you know. Or John Cena would just wrestle in Nikes and a friggin', you know, cargo shorts. At least the shorts, though. Give him that.
Seems a little bit more comfortable, than like those tight jeans.
Not for nothing, those cowboy boots have zero ankle support, dude. He tried to do a kip up just now. Look, the boot was going to collapse underneath his weight. You know, like, whereas, like, you have kick pads and shin guards for Jericho with knee pads. Like, he's, you know, he's, like, ready to go.
So Shawn Michaels kicks out of the lion's salt that Jericho eliminated two guys with in this match.
Tries to pin him again. Crimson mask for sure for Shawn Michaels.
A crimson mask.
Right, just to steal something from JR. He really is covered in blood right there at this point. Yeah, so kicking out of the lion's salt is a big deal. Jericho did eliminate two guys, Booker T and Kane, with it. In Kane's respect. Oh, here we go. Going up for a... See, here's the thing, though. Jericho's there waiting for the moonsault to happen. He's holding his shin, looking right up at him. Almost gets him with the moonsault. But still, like, you know, those are one of the spots. I know JR calls people out about it, too, where you're, like, on the outside and there's two or three people and they're literally just holding each other, waiting for the person to jump off the top rope. They have to do that better. With the athleticism of today's wrestler, they could come up with a different spot for that, you know?
Right.
And then it could just be something that could be a little bit more significant. Like, why am I waiting for you? Oh, DDT from Triple H.
Getting back to his boots here, it must be uncomfortable for him, but what about taking Sweet Chin Music with that? Because those aren't, I mean, wrestling boots, I imagine, hurt if you get a stiff shot. But taking a stiff shot with an actual cowboy boot, not something I would want to do.
Oh, I'd be pissed. But here's a nonsensical thing that just happened. Triple H hits Shawn Michaels with a DDT, and Jericho goes to cover him for the pin, and Triple H pulls Jericho off. And now they got into a yelling and a shoving match, and now they're both wrestling against each other, fighting against each other. This is an elimination match. There was no need for Triple H to pull him off. It's not like he's going to lose the title if he pins Shawn Michaels. So where was the logic there? That made no sense to me. I mean, you wanted to set up a spot between him and Jericho just now, but they could have did it other ways.
Yeah, I think sometimes they probably just – I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the, you know, if they tried to play it off, would it be that Triple H wants to be the one to eliminate him? But here's the lines. Triple H getting a lot more active now.
He is getting more active. He is in the Sweet Chin Music, and I think Shawn Michaels will hit him. Speaking of which, Lion Tamer or Walls of Jericho, and I think Shawn Michaels is going to hit him with a Sweet Chin Music while he's in the move.
Yep. Should be coming any second now.
Yep, Shawn Michaels getting up. In the corner, Triple H is attempting to crawl to the ropes, even though I'm pretty sure there was no rope break announced in this match, but okay.
Here it comes. There it is.
Oh, there it is. It's over.
And that looks stiff.
That looks stiff as hell. Shawn Michaels pinning Jericho. Jericho is the next guy eliminated. Is now down to the final two. Shawn Michaels, Triple H, winner, takes home the world title. Wow. Shawn Michaels a bloody mess. Triple H a bloody mess.
And this, I know we talked about this on one of our previous episodes, but Shawn Michaels made his big return, as we mentioned earlier, SummerSlam, after being gone for 4 years. He comes back in the first ever Elimination Chamber match, wins the match, wins the world title, another accolade added to his resume, loses the belt a month later, and would never again, up until retirement in 2010, would he be world champion.
Yeah. I think I mentioned this before, but I think for him at that point, I don't think he needed a title to put him over the top. He was already the greatest, you know, at that point when he was about to retire, he was probably, you know, arguably the greatest performer ever. England before him, he's missed the WrestleMania. I mean, he had a few tag title runs with Triple H and John Cena, but I don't think he needed, well, for me personally, he didn't need that world title run. It was more about elevating the next guy while him still looking good. And he had those great matches with Taker. He had those, the great series of matches with Jericho. Mm-hmm. You know, he would have a main event against John Cena in a few years from now, from this 2002 Survivor Series. He would have a great match with Kurt Angle at WrestleMania. I mean, like, to me, it wasn't about for him. He didn't need that world title anymore. It was more about the performance, and he always put on a fucking damn good performance, you know? I am surprised, though. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, because I just feel like they could have given him another, even if it was a short run, they could have done it.
I mean, when I talk about short runs, he loses at the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, and to think about this, the guy is the first number one to enter at the Royal Rumble and win it. He wins the first ever Hell in a Cell match. He wins the first ever Elimination Chamber match. Like, okay, guy, like, settle down with your accolades.
A lot of first evers on his resume for sure, and he just went through the pod.
Oof. I see what you're saying. It does become real jagged as soon as it breaks in half. Like, it doesn't. It's not even a clean break. The one that's on his left hand side looks like it's could stab him in the chest.
Yeah, plexiglass is no joke. I mean, I've cut pieces of it, and when it breaks, it cuts you very, very easily.
Wow, he looks in to be this whole match is just painful. There's nothing good about it. Wow. You know, I would actually love to watch is the Raw following this pay-per-view, because I do not remember him like celebrating with the world title at all. I mean, again, it's nearly 20 years later, but I cannot for the life of me even give you like an inkling of what happened the next night.
I think the next night he defended the title against Rob Van Dam.
The night after? I'm looking. You know what? You're right. I'm looking it up now. Yeah, you are right. Wow. That's incredible. He went from this hard-ass Elimination Chamber match and RVD as well, and defending it against RVD.
And which I think is the only time they ever went one-on-one.
Wow. I think that would be... So this is saying the November 25th edition of Raw. And this Survivor Series occurred... What day am I looking at here?
November 17th. So maybe November it was the following 17th. Week.
So it was the following week. You're right, because Triple H was in the hospital.
Yeah.
Right? So then it would be the week after that he would defend against Rob Van Dam, because then Triple H would actually show up and attack Rob Van Dam, causing a DQ finish. Which would lead to a match the following week between the two. So people really... I mean, it would make sense. You're in this hard-ass match. Why would you defend it the next night, or any of them wrestle the next night for sure? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, it's a testament to them and their, you know, athletic prowess and toughness. It's why you wish people would give them more credit for doing what they do.
Nah, man, he knows how to fall. That's what my grandfather used to say. All the time. It didn't matter how simple or hard the bump looked like. He'd be like, oh, he knows how to fall. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, he just fell 30 feet, you know, through tables, but he knows how to do it.
I used to love when JR used to say it on commentary. He'd be like, yeah, somebody at home's like, oh, yeah, he knows how to fall. And I'm like, oh, you're the man. That's Grandpa 101 right there. So you have Triple H pushing Earl Hebner away, like setting up for a pedigree on the outside. And, oop, as usual, legs out from underneath. He's going to go for a slingshot into the chain link. So Triple H resting up for a majority of the match after taking that hit to the neck and had a nice little back and forth with Jericho. Now having a nice little sequence with Triple H, Shawn Michaels, excuse me.
Definitely an advantage for him for it to be a multi-man match, suffering that injury.
Right.
Being able to, you know, rest up while the other guys were working. Michaels now. Looks like he's going to try to go to the top of the pod.
Oh, God.
And Triple H is probably dreading this right now.
Yeah, he's probably like, yo, chill out.
and you can see, he elbowed him. Triple H turned to his side and took the elbow on his, like, arm.
Yeah, but at this point, I think this might have been where the wrist might have got hurt as well. You know what I mean? Because he does hit him in the midsection, but you can see when he rolls over, Triple H is kind of favoring the wrist a little bit. Yeah, I think that might have been it. His elbow lands right on the wrist. Triple H is all types of fucked up here, man. That's pretty incredible. Nice kind of panning to the crowd here. We're looking for some sweet chin in the corner, tuning up the band with those cowboy boots and the doodoo brown pants.
Those are some ugly ass pants.
I can't get over it. I just can't stop staring. And you know what's funny? In that year's game, which
would be
Raw versus SmackDown, that was his attire in the game. So every time I would deliberately not take Shawn Michaels because he had that attire. Because I hated it.
I did the same thing. Oh, Triple H caught it.
Spins him around, going for a pedigree. Can he hit it?
And he does.
Triple H. I always liked when people kind of kicked their legs out and took it on the chest and the face area, whereas like Kane was notorious for that too, and Shawn Michaels just did it where they would land on one knee.
Yeah. I think X-Pac always took it the best, where he just flattened himself out.
Yeah, he would just kick his legs out, just take it flat, right? Whereas like Kane, I think, always took the pedigree the worst. He would always land on that one knee. It would always look awkward.
Have you ever seen, and here's the cover, and Michaels kicked out, of course. Have you ever seen when he did it back in his Hunter Hearst Helmsley days when he like debuted and he drove the guy straight on his head with it?
Yeah. It was almost like he spiked him.
Yeah.
Very dangerous. And the funny thing is that he would use the Diamond Cutter / RKO as his finish in the beginning until DDP called him and asked him not to use the move anymore.
Yeah.
Amazing. Imagine if the pedigree would have been the freaking RKO. And what would Randy Orton be using? The overdrive still?
Ugh. What a stupid move that was.
Hated it. MVP still has it.
There it is.
Three chain music. He spins around, falls right on top of him. Here's one.
And it's over.
There's JR. Classic.
Nobody does it like JR. But I think, unfortunately, if you listen to him on AEW, it just sounds like he's not interested anymore.
I think he plays his role in AEW real well. He's not going to be Jerry Lawler, you know, JR era-ish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, him and Shivani next caliber. I think that's a nice dynamic. I would like to see some, I don't want to say young blood, because I don't want to disrespect them, but, you know what it is? Excalibur doesn't do it for me.
No. Well, there's a big celebration, confetti, Shawn Michaels.
It's a huge match, you know? Yeah. A huge match. He's the first winner again. Celebrating with the world title, and you know what? Can't look at the title, can't take my eyes off the dude with brown pants.
Look at that confetti just everywhere. It's a lot of confetti.
You know, I feel bad for us to clean that up after the fact.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a nice touch giving Shawn Michaels this win, especially coming back that SummerSlam after a potentially career-threatening injury with the back. Having a dynamite match with Triple H and then winning this match.
out for 4 years and then comes back and wins the world title.
Seems like he gave Triple H a little thank you there. It's weird seeing him with the big gold belt, though. I'm not going to lie. Especially for the fact that it was such a short reign.
Yeah. But I do love that belt, though.
Yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to order it right now. That's it. Going right online. I've actually added to my belt collection considerably over the years. And that does it, man. We have our first Elimination Chamber in the book. Shawn Michaels is celebrating. He would unfortunately go on to lose it at the next pay-per-view Armageddon in a Three Stages of Hell match.
But a great match, though.
Really good. Now, I would think that's another match I got to watch again. I got to start watching these matches from the early 2000s again, or the early aughts, as they like to say. It was, what was it, Street Fight in the first match? Triple H won that. Then it was a steel cage that Michaels won, and then it was a ladder match that Triple H won, right? I mean, that's pretty crazy, right? Street Fight, steel cage, ladder match. I mean, whoa.
A lot going on,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. That's a good. That's something we have to maybe check out and revisit there, because that's a hell of a match.
Yeah, well, maybe we can chronicle the Triple H Shawn Michaels rivalry and highlight their best matches, and that would definitely be one of them.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's something we think. I think next on the list, right? We'll do a little versus action. Shawn Michaels Triple H would be a great way to kick it off, I think. Wow, so man, you saw it here. Hopefully you watched along with us. Survivor Series 2002. What'd you think of the Elimination Chamber match? Very unforgiving. Did the right guy win? What do you think of the Dude in Brown Pants? Do you hate it as much as we do? At Wrestling Guys PC, as usual. Because, I mean, great match. I liked the match. I enjoyed it a great deal. I think I liked it better now than I think when we watched it when we were in high school back in 2002.
Well, it's always nice to go back and revisit, you know, that it's that nostalgia.
I think it's better when we're a bit more mature, too, you know?
Yeah, but it was definitely a great match. I would put it, you know, top five of all the Elimination Chamber matches.
Out of the 26, I mean, you do got to throw it. It is the first one ever, right?
Right.
I mean, I remember having the, I remember getting the Elimination Chamber DVD where it had, I think, up until that point, every single Elimination Chamber match. I have to dig it up somewhere. But now with the network, who gives a damn, right? I mean, half of my wrestling DVDs that I have are obsolete pretty much at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's great to see. It's good to see these guys, like, it sounds stupid, but it's good to see somebody like a Kane then, you know, because I mean, now he's practically retired. And but, you know, Jericho's still doing it. So, you know, a guy like Jericho still doing it at his age and looking at him here in 2002 is pretty incredible. Guys like Booker T who are retired, good to see. Rob Van Dam, we haven't seen a WWE ring in a very long time. All that stuff, man. It's just it's good to see these matches. Go back and revisit them. We hope you enjoyed it as well. But don't go too far, because next week, oh man, do we have a whopper lined up for you? Because it was the fifth Elimination Chamber match. The first four were strictly Raw. It was the pay-per-view to end all pay-per-views. And I'm talking about the ECW brand, the revived ECW brand's December to Dismember. And their variation was called the Extreme Elimination Chamber match. Each chamber had four weapons locked inside to hold on to. When each chamber opened, their weapon also entered the match with them. It was what, a crowbar, a table, a folding chair, and a barbed wire wrap baseball bat. And we got nuts. I mean, who were the entrants in that match? If I remember correctly, it was, what, CM Punk, Hardcore Holly.
Test.
Yes, Test. Rob Van Dam, Big Show, and the eventual winner, Bobby Lashley.
Bobby Lashley, yep. And it was, I think, the pay-per-view that wound up killing the revival of ECW in WWE. I mean, that would last, I think ECW would go on until like 2009 or something, but
it
was the pay-per-view that killed any momentum that it had to actually being something that WWE could profit off of.
Less than 24 hours after that pay-per-view, Paul Heyman would be sent home by Vince.
Yep.
He would cut a promo and then legitimately leave WWE, but he was still under contract. He was against the decision of Lashley when he wanted CM Punk to win it, but instead CM Punk ended up being the first person eliminated, I believe.
I think so.
And actually, it was funny because Punk would actually work that into the pipe bomb promo years later about that. Upset, and I think too, if I'm looking at it now, I'm actually looking it up as we're talking here, but Dreamer and Stevie Richards both asked to be released after that event, and they were both refused.
Really?
Yeah. The only match that actually got praise in that whole thing was a Hardy Boys versus Eminem tag match, which had nothing to do with ECW.
Yeah, it's true.
It would get the worst major wrestling show of the year in 2006 by the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards. And Slam Sports were rated 4 out of 10 stars. Wow. That's how bad this thing is. I mean, look at these. Listen, and I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but Stevie Richards versus Rene Dupree, Hardy Boys against Eminem, Balls Mahoney against Matt Stryker, Elijah Burke and Sylvester Turkai against the FBI, Daivari against Tommy Dreamer, Ariel and Kevin Thorne against Kelly and Mike Knox, and then you have the Extreme Elimination Chamber match. This is...
Not complaining about seeing Ariel, though.
Or Kelly, hang on.
Yeah. But yeah, very... I mean, to say it's a weak card is an understatement. Obviously, the match of the night is the Hardys and Eminem. But the Chamber match, I don't think it was a bad match. I just think the show overall was bad and it was lacking. And yeah.
Wouldn't it take place a week after another WWE event?
I think it did.
Right? I mean, I want to say that it was Survivor Series, and then a week later, it was December this month. Like, literally a week later. Not like a buildup of a week. It was a Sunday, and then it was the very, very next Sunday. So, yeah, I mean, they really didn't do it any favors either.
Right, and Sabu was actually taken out of that match in favor of Hardcore Holly, right? I think, Sabu was supposed to be in it, and he wasn't, which is also disappointing in itself.
You know, I don't hate it. Not a big fan of Sabu. Not gonna lie.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Not. And we could. That's maybe a show for another day. But December 3rd, 2006. December to Dismember. Also, who came up with the name December to Dismember? My God. Actually, you know, a playoff of November to Remember. But we know we just like things that rhyme. But okay.
Well, ECW does.
And the Sandman hand holding the cane out of the chimney. Very, very weird as well.
He wasn't even part of it.
No. That's man, this event, we haven't even covered it yet. This event's fucking bad 1,000.
It's a lot to unravel, and I'm sure we'll have fun. So make sure you're tuning into that. Make sure you're subscribing to Wrestling Guys podcast wherever you are listening. Following us on Twitter, Wrestling Guys PC. And if you are willing and able, check out the Fans Perspective, where we talk about movies and TV shows, and we're actually going to be uploading our new episode at the end of this week, where we are going to be chronicling Blaxploitation.
It's
Black History Month, and we wanted to talk about the Blaxploitation era and also get into the more modern era of Black films and films like Black Panther and what that did for Black entertainment. So make sure you're checking that out.
Be checking out myself. Sounds good. I'm actually teaching a segment on race and gender in my film class right now. So it's all about that exactly. So that's going to be great. Awesome. Nice. Good stuff. We hope you had a good time. I think we're ready to wrap it up here. We'll make it nice and sweet here. Keep it short to the point. And as usual, as he just said, where you find all your podcasts, right? Everywhere. Spotify. Apple. Google. We're everywhere. Everywhere.
Everywhere.
You come, you download, you subscribe, you leave a 5-star rating, you tell us everything you want to hear on this show. Future shows, what I did, do you hate the doo-doo brown pants? You let us know anything you want to cover in the future at Wrestling Guys PC, at FPP Show. You know where it is. You know how we do. We appreciate all the downloads. We appreciate all the comments. And in the meantime and in between time, this has been the Wrestling Guys Podcast. We came to talk about wrestling and drink some virtual beers. We're just about all about virtual beers. But take the virtual clink to seal the deal. Wash your hands. Stay safe. Wear a damn mask. How you doing?